Hello and welcome to this Backup Academy track, How to Do a Backup Wrong, Top Mistakes. My name's Rick Vanover and I'm going to be presenting this content here for you today. You can find me on Twitter, at Rick Vanover, and I also tweet on behalf of Backup Academy, BCKP Academy, and on behalf of Veeam, at Veeam. I encourage you to check out Twitter. It's a great way to interact with myself and other members of the virtualization and data protection community. Okay, let's go ahead and get started with this track. Before we get started with this track, I want to take a moment and tell you a little bit about myself. First of all, I do work for Veeam Software. Veeam are sponsors of the Backup Academy content, but what we talk about here, as you probably already know, is very generic in terms of virtualization and data protection technologies. I do blog on the Veeam blog at veeam.com/blog. Now, I also write on a couple of other external blog sites, one of which is the Everyday Virtualization blog online at Virtualization Review. And I also write in the Data Center blog at techrepublic.com. In terms of training and certification, I do have Microsoft Certified IT Professional status, Server Administrator, and VMware Certified Professional VCP 3, 4, and 5. I've also had VMware vExpert designation for the last 2 or 3 years. It's been a bunch. But basically, I've spent the last 15 or so years working in IT, and I've had a very sound focus on virtualization for the last 7 or 8 years. It's really consumed me almost entirely. So when it comes to talking about virtual machines and then data protection, I feel I'm ready to show you what I know. And this particular topic is really different because it's not so much how to do something, but what we see done wrong. So everyone will learn from this. Let's go ahead and get started. So let's talk about what we are going to have in this session. When we talk about how to do a backup wrong, this was actually quite easy to come up with. In fact, it was also a frequently requested topic. We've spent a lot of time in the other Backup Academy sessions talking about what we should do or how to do something correctly, but it might be overlooked that there's plenty we can do wrong. So we thought it would be beneficial if we would take some of the common errors and explain why these are a problem. So let's go through some of these that we're going to talk about here today. Supportability and platforms, you know, ensuring that what you're trying to do will work, even if it's not officially supported. We'll talk about that. We're going to talk about the differences between a file and an application data type of restore, as well as what your users may be wanting from a backup solution. We're going to talk about consistency. There's a lot of consideration around different levels of consistency for a backup. And when it comes to VMs, we want to make sure you are getting the best level of consistency possible. Then we want to talk about what's missing. It's very easy to overlook a virtual machine, or even a physical machine for that matter. But we want to make sure you know where to look and how to structure your data protection. We also are going to talk about errors and warnings. We have to know what goes wrong, but more importantly, we need to know how to fix it. We're also going to talk about the guesswork around capacity calculations. Too many times we don't really know how much we need to provide to take backups or ensure that our virtual machines are protected, but we'll make sure you don't omit the important parts. And then we'll talk about frequency. This is a big deal when it comes to ensuring that your stakeholders know what they are getting as an IT service that you are providing for them. And then we'll also wrap up talking about the wrong type of a backup. This is a big deal when it comes to talking about what's running and what needs to be restored versus what's actually been backed up. Okay, let's go ahead and jump into it. The first discussion that I'd like to bring up is supportability. And what I mean by that is our virtualization platforms, vSphere and Hyper-V, they all have very specific support requirements. I'll take vSphere for example. If you've ever designed a virtualization infrastructure, the first place you go is the vSphere compatibility guide. Much like when you assign hardware to a solution, when you go about backups, you want to make sure that the right environment is supported. Now, it's not so much a hardware discussion, but it's more about a software discussion. So things like vSphere 5.1, vSphere 5.0, vSphere 3.5, 4.1, 4.0, all these little versions that are released over the years, they actually have a big difference in how they interact with each other. And what I mean by that, underlying technologies like some of the APIs, like the Virtual Disk Development Kit, things like that over the different releases of vSphere go through changes. And when it comes to a virtual machine backup solution, you want to make sure that the version you are using is supported. Now, the same goes for Hyper-V. Storage changed a lot with Windows Server 2012 with Hyper-V compared to Server 2008 R2 with Hyper-V. So you want to make sure that you have the right solution backing up a supported platform. So in this graphic down here, the real takeaway on this example is that everyone's environments are pretty complex. So we don't want to have to, you know, slow down our data protection by something as silly as not working on this version of the hypervisor or this level of the management framework. So make sure that you take the time to ensure that your backup solution is supported. Now, it's very possible that sometimes it might quote-unquote work on the newer hypervisors, but you may not have tested the restores. So it's always a good idea to ensure that your virtualization-specific backup product is up to date. This could be service packs, hot fixes, as well as major versions, and always read the documentation to help you get there. Same goes for the other way around, vSphere and Hyper-V. When you upgrade those platforms, always make sure that you don't see anything that says in the form of a release note, oh, this will may cause issues with X or may cause third-party products to require X type of configuration. So ensure that we don't have a supportability gap on the platforms. We see this happen a lot, and this is one of our biggest gotchas when it comes to things that could go wrong with a backup. Somewhat related to the supportability conversation is really the design conversation. So there's one phrase that I use, domain of failure. And this is really a Pandora's box or a gateway to a lot of discussion and potential to do things wrong. So let me explain. The domain of failure is, if something breaks, what else will it break? Good example is in virtualization, shared storage. If you lose your shared storage, you probably lost most or all of your virtual machines. So the number one thing that you don't want to do is put your backups in that domain of failure. So let me paint a very specific example. Let's say over here on the left of this diagram, we have a simple three-host cluster, and this could be vSphere or Hyper-V. I'm going to tell you the example in a vSphere environment, but the same would apply for Hyper-V as well. And let's say we have 57 virtual machines and it keeps growing and growing. And let's say we put our backup in this virtual infrastructure as a virtual machine. That's fully supported in many situations. And let's say we have three data stores, the red ones on the bottom. What I could do that would really not be a good idea would be to back up my virtual machines from the same data store and then put them on that same data store in the form of a backup. Now, in terms of vSphere, maybe I have these data stores, you know, separately named, but maybe on the underlying disk, they may actually even be the same piece of equipment. So you have to kind of backtrack downwards to make sure that you actually have full separation, or at least as much separation as possible. So over on the right, you'll see I have a backup infrastructure with a different set of disk resources. Now, I did indicate that the backup may be physical. That doesn't necessarily have to be physical. Maybe if you have a different storage resource on a dedicated host, and you could still run things all virtually, you get the point that you can design your backups around these domains of failure. And in fact, another example, I just had a discussion with someone about where to store the backups. Some people were like, well, I'll store it on a SIFS share because it's easy. And we were talking about that. We talked about that a little bit more. So we actually discovered that they don't want to put their backups on a SIFS share in this particular instance. And that's because they were also backing up their virtualized Active Directory domain controllers. And that storage resource requires Active Directory to deliver the SIF's share. So what would happen if the domain controller was gone? We'd need to get it out of the backup, right? Well, the backup was kept over the SIF's share. So you can quickly see that without the domain controller, we couldn't actually access the storage. So I actually talked to that person a little bit more, and we decided NFS was the better way to go. That's because it doesn't actually need Active Directory to provide the storage. And this particular storage resource wasn't a Windows system, right? So there might be some caching involved. This particular storage system was an appliance, and it had a SIFS or an NFS option. And we actually decided NFS was better. And again, domains of failure kicked in, and in that case, the Active Directory service, which we're backing up, wouldn't be accessible for that SIFS engine if we had to restore it. So when you kind of play the solutions out, make sure you take into account all the different layers, right? Storage, networking, compute, applications, and then even things like authentication. They all come into play, and this was one of the things that when we were talking to someone, we decided we don't want to do it that way to avoid a potential problem. Probably one of the bigger discussions is someone's expectations. Now, when I say expectations, this is really the gap between the policy, the technology, and then the conversation with these stakeholders. So there are a lot of different ways you can back stuff up. Copying files, image-based backups, right? We've got some other Backup Academy topics that talk about that. But whatever is running in these virtual machines, this might not be enough to actually satisfy the restore requirements. So what we need to do is ensure that we have a proper recovery option. So let's take a look at this figure at the bottom. We don't even really sometimes know what all runs in our virtual environments. You know, depending on the size of it, right, we might have applications and virtual machines added, maybe even as a user or, you know, work group administration level frameworks. They may just add virtual machines separate of the infrastructure. So as a virtualization infrastructure, sure, I need to ensure there's capacity and there's storage and that backups, quote-unquote, are just done, but what would they possibly need to restore, right? That might be kind of a trick question. Could be things like identities, like a user, right, out of Active Directory. Chances are we're pretty much okay with that, right? We know how to back that up. Or maybe it's even something like a whole virtual machine. Okay, we can probably do that. But what about database records or email messages, things like that? We need to make sure and have those conversations that the expectations that people have match the backup technology we're using. Now, let's take the worst case example. I deleted an email, and I'm not able to pull the whole thing back. Bringing back the whole virtual machine that may have run email is a recovery option, but it may not be as practical as we'd want. So again, have the discussions, make sure we're familiar with the technology that we are using, and that we know how to go through all these different scenarios. And really, no matter what backup product you're using, chances are it all can be done, but it might be just a learning endeavor. Go through the drill, read the documentation, engage in things like Twitter, user forums, discussion groups, those types of things that will really equip you to know where to go to get the right information. Probably the biggest area of confusion and possibly risk is consistency. Now, when we talk about consistency, let's first of all explain what that could be. Consistency levels in regards to backups, and specifically virtual machine backups, really start from something as simple and less safe as something called crash-consistent backups, and then something as robust as what we would call application-consistent backups. These different levels indicate really the maturity and the sophistication of the backup. It may or may not impact the recoverability, but chances are there's scenarios that will limit the recoverability into the lesser consistent state, something like crash consistent, or something in the middle like file system consistent that might not be good enough for critical applications. This was such a deal that we actually have a dedicated topic on Backup Academy just for this. And Elias Knaser provided an excellent track on application consistency, as well as other consistency levels. The one framework and the one technology that's talked about the most in that track is VSS, or Microsoft's Volume Shadow Copy Service. For Windows systems, this is by far the best way to go. I really encourage you to check out Elias's track, because it goes into really good depth about how these components work in what I call a framework. So VSS, I like to say, is really a framework for consistency, right? And things like the backup application and the OS, and then the applications themselves will actually coordinate to create the backup consistently. I really encourage you to check that out at backupacademy.com. Now, this is important, because if you don't have the right consistency, we could do our backups wrong in that we won't have the recovery options that we may expect. Now, this next topic, this actually isn't a new problem. In fact, it's not even specific to virtualization. We've all had the situation where we've added a new system, yet, well, we didn't quite put it into the backup routine, or we didn't install the backup software on it, so it's not being backed up. It's not production yet. But you know what? Before we know it, it's become production. So how do we make sure we don't have that problem? We can have procedures, we can have meetings, we can have reports, but what we really need, in my opinion, is a way that these virtual machines are added automatically. That's right. If we could have it organically include our virtual machines that we add, then we'd be in really good shape. So virtualization actually makes this problem worse, because the growth rate is a lot higher than what we had in the physical world. You know this. It's not that tough to deploy a new virtual machine. It takes a lot more time and a lot more effort to deploy a new physical server. But the fact that we may or may not be backing this up, I think our natural tendencies as an administrator will come into play here, and we'll actually be worse at this as virtual machine admins than we would as a physical server admin. So probably our real takeaway is to have an automated solution that would back them up automatically, yet also provide those reports and those management tools that tell us what's missing as a cross-check. So really we have two ways to address this problem. The first is automatically backing up virtual machines, and then the second is to really have a report or some sort of manageability tool that will tell us what is missing over time. Now, at this point in the session, I actually want to go show you this point about missing VMs. I want to show you how you can avoid missing virtual machines in your virtual environment. Inventory items like data stores, folders, VApps, resource pools, entire clusters, they function like a container, and I'm going to show you how to build your backups around that. So let's jump into the vSphere client and take a look. So let's take a look at the vSphere client right here. The vSphere client, as you know, is the Windows administrative tool to look into the vSphere environment, and it connects to a vCenter server. So I have a lot of things going on here. In fact, this is quite a busy environment. I have 10 vSphere hosts, and I have nearly 500 virtual machines. Chances are one's going to show up, and I might not know about it. I have a lot of people that use this environment, so maybe something will happen without me knowing about it. Well, what we can do is build our backup around containers. So I mentioned just a moment ago that vSphere has all kinds of good stuff to help us. That can be things like data stores, entire clusters, resource pools, etc. So every item in vSphere has a tab called Virtual Machines. So I've selected this data center here. This is for Columbus, Ohio in the Americas, where I'm located. And if you click on the Virtual Machines tab, then you get effectively a query that says what virtual machines are in this container. Now, if I'm going about a backup that is aware of vSphere and all of its entities, I can leverage this. So let's say I want to take a look at things like folders, right? I personally like the folder arrangement. I have a couple of different folders to use here, and I've organized my virtual machines in a couple of different ways. And in fact, this very first folder here, this is the important one. I have the critical Windows and Linux virtual machines that I need for my core infrastructure listed in this folder. Now, when I query this parent folder, I get virtual machines. There's a total of 5. They're not big, and there's not that many of them, but they are important. So when I look at it this way, if I were to make my backup around this infrastructure core folder, I would actually include all of the virtual machines that are my core infrastructure. And then the moment that I create a new virtual machine, I'm just going to give it a name, just a example here, example new VM. When I add it into any part of the actual compute infrastructure, the different servers, the different storage, when I add it into any of those different places, it doesn't even matter which data store I put it on, doesn't matter what OS I make it, you know, none of these options matter, except I do want to do thin provisioning. A new VM is created, right? And you saw it arrive. And this is normal vSphere administration. But the fact that the folder, which functions as a container, now has this new virtual machine, and if I can build my backups around it, that organic growth can be accommodated. Same thing goes for if something is removed. If it's removed, then I can still recover it back into that same spot, even if I don't even know where that happened. Now, I can flip this around and do this another way. Let's look at additional inventories like data stores. If I possibly only needed to back up my production data stores, I could, you know, make my backup jobs, select a data store, and inventory the virtual machines on that data store and back those up. Same thing goes with local storage, SAN storage. You know, you might build your policies around something like, well, we don't back up local storage, but we only back up SAN or NAS virtual machines. Whatever makes sense in your environment, and especially for these first couple of data stores, you can clearly see direct attached storage, NAS storage, SAN storage. Helps me as an administrator know what's going on. These containers also work for resource pools. I don't really prefer those as a administrative group, but for backups, but you can do it, and you can see I have a few in here. Nonetheless, they'll function as a container, return virtual machines, and allow you to back up all the virtual machines in that container, even as new virtual machines are added. Now, aside from accommodating the virtual machines that you don't know about, or having some missing from your backup routine, one of the other most popular situations or, you know, things you can do wrong with a backup is not having proper error and alert notification. Now, here's the reality. Things can go wrong. Something might break, something might not be working as expected, but chances are you can fix it. Now, you should have good visibility to know that something has gone wrong, so it's always worth taking the time to make sure that notification is set up correctly. So there's no worse of a feeling than going in to do a restore and to find out that your backups haven't been working for ever, or at least as long as this restore scenario could be accomplished. So when it comes to alerting and notification, it's really important to know what went wrong. Did the backup fail? Did the backup partially fail? Does the right person get the alert? Right? It doesn't do any good if an alert goes somewhere, but it's not the right person, right? If they're not able to fix it, or even worse, organizationally, maybe it goes to someone who doesn't care about that system, then you have to rely on a passing along of that error message. Make sure the right person gets it. Now, there's a difference between just knowing about the alert and then getting it fixed, right? You know, I live in a complex world, as you do as well, and to get an alert, you know, you have to fix it. But it's also important to not have too many alerts, because then you just get buried in details. If you have every little system going full alert of every little problem, including just informational messages, you'll quickly get lost in the shuffle. When it comes to a backup, chances are that's pretty important. You might want to consider things like paging, alerting that will require interaction. So what I mean by that is if you don't acknowledge the error, then you might get reminded of it, that type of thing. So whatever your alerting framework is, make sure that your backups really are well represented, because if you don't know that the jobs were successful, then you might be missing out on your restore options. And there is a term that we use in the IT world called a resume generating event. And trust me, you don't want to go through one of those. Now, here's the other half of that. Again, I understand that there's a lot of errors and a lot of alerts that may come up. But sometimes we get in situations where we have to just, quote, make it work. Now, we don't have the chance to always be an expert in everything, but, you know, it happens. We have to wear many hats. That I can understand. But when we deal with these situations, we have to take the time to identify what needs to be fixed and how. It doesn't do us any good to just throw these problems under the rug. It's going to come up and bite us later on. Or settling for a lesser level of recovery because we don't know how to diagnose this error. Or maybe, I don't know how to recover just that email message, so I'm just going to have to go through the whole process of mounting a recovery database, right? That might be a waste of your time. So it might be worth doing what you need to do to get up to speed. So, and this is going to help you later on. Something's going to come up, and if you're better equipped for the scenario, this will be an investment worth, worth your time. The big takeaway is, I'm not saying it's easy, I'm saying it's worth it. Now, another thing that can go wrong are some of the guesswork factors. A lot of times, backup administrators and virtual machine administrators have a lot of trouble identifying how big to make something. Now, this could even apply to our virtual environment. Okay, I want to go virtual. Well, how big does it need to be? I don't know. There's a lot of factors. How many virtual machines? How are they going to grow? Well, a lot of those questions and possibly more apply to the backup decisions as well. Am I going to use tape, disk, cloud storage? Multiple options in that realm, possibly. What kind of bandwidth do I have? How long do I need to keep them? And what type of retention and change rate do I have? These are a lot of details that a lot of times we don't always know. We don't always know our behavior. So, and the other dimension of disruption here is that with virtualization, the number of virtual machines will always go up, it seems. You might have less equipment in the data center, but the number of virtual machines likely will go up. And this could also be a consequence of, well, I don't really need this system anymore. I'll turn it off. I'll hold on to it. But do I need to back it up? Those are big questions. Now, there's one technology that I think can help you get out of a jam, and that's Windows Server 2012 deduplication. If you're not familiar with Windows Server 2012 data deduplication, you should really check it out. It doesn't have the high cost of a lot of deduplication appliances, and it's in a Windows system. You already know how to use it. How cool is that? Now, it's a feature that's added to Windows after it's installed. Now, you can do it all through PowerShell, or you can do it through Server Manager. But basically, it's part of the file and print services. Once it's added, a volume other than the C drive can have deduplication enabled, and you can check to see how it's performing quite easily. This can help you with your backup set. Now, your backup software may provide some deduplication as well, and you might have an appliance. In fact, the other track we have by Mark Crespi explains deduplication in general, but this Windows deduplication engine has come out since Mark's track. Now, the takeaway here is this can get you out of a jam for almost no additional cost. If you need to save some disk space, you can turn on Windows Server deduplication, and you can be on your merry way. Now, it goes without saying that deduplication has overhead, in particular CPU, and disk I/O overhead would be expected if you were to turn on Windows Server 2012 deduplication. I'm not saying that you should avoid it because of that. I'm saying you should just know that in order to save some of that space, you might incur additional CPU cycles as well as increased read and write I/O on your storage systems running Windows. Virtual or physical, that should be expected. Additionally, a frequent area where backups can go wrong is the frequency. Now, it's pretty easy to convince me, and hopefully it is to convince you as well, that all virtual machines are not created equal. They all don't behave the same, and they all don't have the same requirements. Same goes for protection. So, when we go about making a backup schedule or a backup routine, it's important to know what the expectation is of the recovery. We might have just one virtual machine that might need to be recovered as soon as every hour or as soon as every 30 minutes. Or some systems are good once a week, right? We don't want to just make blanket rules every day at 10 p.m. or something like that for all virtual machines. This is another example where we need to have the conversations with the stakeholders to ensure that their needs are represented in the backup frequency. So you can have multiple frequencies. That's an option too. Maybe multiple jobs, maybe all virtual machines at 10 p.m. and then this virtual machine additionally every hour. That's an option as well. So have the conversation with the business and ensure that the frequency matches their expectations. Aside from the frequency, there's also a phenomena of taking the wrong type of backup. So when we talk about the backups that we can do, image, file, application type backups, we also want to make sure that we're not misconstruing what we're backing up. Best example is the wrong type of snapshot. You know, we talk about snapshots of virtual machines. It's a great technology to mark your progress and time. But a snapshot by itself, it's very important to note, by itself is not a backup. In fact, that's bad virtualization practice. Now, a lot of virtual machine backup solutions use a snapshot as part of their backup process, but the last part of that is to remove that snapshot. It comes down to the quiescence and the consistency discussion talked about earlier. So when we understand how the backups may work, then we can understand what type of backups should we be taking. Should we have file-based backups? Should we have application-based backups as well? Now, when I say application backups, that's different than application consistencies. So if we want to talk about something like SQL Server, right? There's a lot of virtual machine backup solutions that support SQL Server. But if you have a SQL Server database administrator in your organization, it's very possible they want to have very specific application-level backups and application-level restores that they may script entirely on their own. If you have that requirement, maybe they should go ahead and set up their scripts. And specifically for SQL, that might be a SQL Server maintenance plan, SQL Server agent job, etc., etc. But that doesn't mean you don't need to back up that VM. What happens if Windows gets messed up in the SQL Server example? Or what happens if they change their script and they don't remember where they changed it? You might be able to bring that back for them. So there's plenty of situations where the wrong type of backup might mean, okay, SQL Server database administrator, you're going to do the backup. I don't have anything to do with it. That might actually not be enough. You might need to do both to meet the entire requirements of application backups and, you know, scripted restores at the application level, yet system things like the operating system and some of those scripts that are leveraged for that application maintenance, those may need to be protected as well. And again, this is where the discussion part comes into play. A lot of times as a VM administrator, we just want to get it done. We want to get our backups set. We want to get our virtual environment built. But the applications, the expectations, they all need to be discussed. And this is just a collection of some of the problems that we've heard from feedback that we want to make sure that you don't have in your virtual environment. Another area where you can have a lot of problems in your virtual machine backup is lacking the ability to have multiple copies of a backup. And what I mean by this is that it's always a good idea to have another instance of it. It's very possible that a disk resource, for example, may have failed, and then all the backups are gone. And if those backups aren't somehow moved to another location, then only having one instance of them can put you at risk. I like to say that there's a good idea of taking a layered approach, and there can be a lot of different ways to do that. The good thing about virtualization is that there are a lot of technologies that help us enable that. I like disk-based backup. It's quick, it's pretty easy to set up, and you can even use common technologies such as Windows Server or even Windows desktop operating systems. Then you can also have replication technologies, and those can be both on and off-site. Now you can also couple that with storage technologies like a SAN snapshot, and that could be both for your primary VMs, though that's not a backup by itself, or it can even be for the place that you put your storage. So what I mean by that is if you have a backup that is kept on a storage resource that supports SAN snapshots, you might even be able to take snapshots of your backup resource as well. And today is an era of cloud storage, so it's very possible that we can put virtual machine backups to the cloud today, as well as steadfast portable techniques such as tape. Tape is not dead, no matter what anybody says. Personally, in my professional experience, I've tried to avoid it. I have nothing usually but bad stories about it. But I do think that a lot of people still use tape, and for the portability factor, it has a good value proposition. As well as having copies of our existing disk resources off-site, you can really draw up a layered data protection approach that can probably meet any requirement you have, but accommodate failures within your backup strategy as well. So that's a kind of a mistake that I've seen sometimes, where we have all of our backups in one resource, and if that fails, then we might be in trouble. And probably my most practical advice when it comes to taking the wrong type of backup or doing backups wrong is to avoid overcomplicating things. I'll be honest with you, I'm guilty of this myself in my professional career. A lot of times I'll go very deep on a topic, but I might not need to put all these extra little configuration elements into my virtual machines or my general administration practice. In the United States, we have a phrase that says, "Keep it simple, stupid." Now, that's not saying that anybody isn't smart. It's just if we simplify things, and it goes by the acronym KISS, if we simplify things, we can really just allow ourselves to function a little bit better down the road. Now, this will help us with backups, it'll help us in troubleshooting, and then if we need to make a change down the road, chances are we'll be able to do that without many barriers. When it comes to virtual machine backups, there are a number of things that can help you overcomplicate things. First of all, are RDMs in the VMware space. The difference in performance is hard to measure between using a VMDK and an RDM. But if you use an RDM, and specifically if you go into one of the two different modes that are supported, virtual or physical RDM mode, and RDM, by the way, stands for raw device mapping, which is effectively presenting storage directly to a virtual machine from a SAN rather than having that virtual machine storage live on a VMDK. In that sense, you lose some features, like you're not able to take a virtual machine snapshot of a VM with a physical mode RDM, right? So that might hurt you down the way. Now, another example in the Hyper-V space is pass-through storage. Same type of concept, but given a different name. You just want to make sure that you're not selling yourself short of any hypervisor-based features by that decision up front. Now, you can also do some tricks inside the guest virtual machine. One of those is iSCSI storage. Now, it's very possible to have the iSCSI initiator inside of a virtual machine, and this is both vSphere and Hyper-V. It's very possible to have that iSCSI initiator latch onto storage over an iSCSI network. That's fine, but it's important to note that that storage then is not part of the virtual machine. So we have to be careful when we think about portability of that virtual machine. We always have to think of that physical storage resource that it's connected to. And this one can get you in any virtualization platform, and that's the lack of an Enlightenment kit. The Enlightenment kit, such as VMware Tools or Integration Services for Hyper-V, allows the virtual machine to perform and communicate and interact with the virtualized hardware components correctly. Without that, you might be missing out. That may impact your backups, that may impact your performance, and it also may impact your ability to administer that virtual machine. So that's a kind of a frequent gotcha. And on the other side would be obsolescence. VMware Tools out of date. ESX host not up to date. Still on Hyper-V. On Windows Server 2008 R2. Maybe it's time to push it up to Windows Server 2012. The technologies just get better over time. Chances are you might be missing out on something, and it might be worth keeping all the components up to date. But do so in a way that you don't overcomplicate how your virtual machines exist, which would impact how you back them up. Now, as we wrap up this session, this is a kind of a different one, right? We're trying to talk about everything to do wrong, not necessarily how to do it right. And again, we do appreciate your feedback, which you can do on the Backup Academy feedback form, as well as on Twitter at BCKP Academy on Twitter, or myself at Rick Vanover. And we really want you to know that the big things, platforms, files, consistency levels, what's missing, errors and alert, capacity, frequency, and the wrong type of backup, maybe some of the big things that you could be doing wrong, yet you actually don't even know it. My goal in this track is that hopefully you've seen some new areas of your environment that you might say, oh, I need to have that conversation with the stakeholder, or oh, maybe I should back up that database server even though the DBA says he's backing it up as well. Have the discussion, make sure the technology meets the expectation. That's the goal. I hope you enjoyed this session, and if you have any feedback, be sure to send me a tweet or an email, or otherwise engage on the Backup Academy form, and please check out more Backup Academy sessions. Thank you, everyone.